Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll enjoy some fresh Kauai-grown onions, discover the importance of potassium for our plants, and get up close and personal with the cactus family. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our fine underwriters.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapaa Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored designs and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And thank you again to our underwriters and all our fine listeners and all the birds and the bees and all the plants and the sunshine and on this beautiful natural world we live in. And thanks to you, Robin, for coming in today and sharing this day with me.
My pleasure. Nice to be here with you.
Mac, it's great to have you in the garden with us as well today. Quite a fine weeder Mac is, and once he gets started, it's hard to get him to stop. So he's pulling some pretty big ageratum plants out of the out of the sort of weedy corners of the garden as we get down to talking about our garden and talking about how we can improve our success, because we want to have success out there, right?
Yes, we do.
So we're going to look into the heavens above, starting out with our celestial session. We've got a good show for you today. Happy to be sharing this beautiful summer day. Summer has really arrived, and while we're in a cool, shady part of the garden right now, it sure is warm out there. So I hope you're all enjoying this beautiful weather. Today's moon phase is brought to you by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication. And today's Hawaiian moon phase is Ka Loa Ku Kahi. This is in the Emi, or final Anahulu, the final of three moon weeks in the moon cycle. And it is the diminishing time of the moon. The moon is shrinking day by day, night by night. And today, Ka Loa Ku Kahi rose on Kauai just after midnight, or I guess it was close to 1 a.m. This morning. She reached her transit, or her highest point in the sky, at 6:53 a.m. this morning. And she'll set just before we're done with the garden show here at 12:56 p.m. this afternoon. About 50% of the moon's face is illuminated today. And today is the last quarter moon.
Mm-hmm.
And the mana'o on this particular moon from the ancient traditions, Ka Loa Ku Kahi, is the first of three moons named for and sacred to the ocean god Kanaloa. Planting recommendations would be for mai'a, bananas, ohe, bamboo, ko, sugarcane, and other kinds of vined plants, or I should say vined plants are supposed to be especially productive if planted today.
far out. Well, I was beautifully woken up in the wee hours of the morning by that awesome moon glow glowing in our bedroom window. And as soon as I laid eyes on her, I knew, oh, it's the last quarter moon. How beautiful. It was right overhead at sunrise. It was quite nice. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, we are in the ascending moon phase right now, so the upper parts of the plant are going to be featured today and tomorrow. The moon's in Aquarius, an air sign, making it a good time for our flowering plants. And through my experience, I've learned these are ideal days to do cuttings or vegetative propagation of plants like rosemary and those other ones that we like to propagate by slips. Friday and Saturday, the moon will be in Pisces, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leafy plants. Might be a good time for some pruning. Sunday and Monday, the moon is in Aries, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants. We could do activities like air layering, grafting, or if we're going to harvest fruits that we'd like to keep a while, this is also a really good time to harvest them for miniature storage, as we don't store too many things here on the island, except in the refrigerator. And Tuesday next, the moon will be in Taurus, an earth sign, making it a great day to work with our rooting plants.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that harvesting at the proper time for the longevity of fruits in storage, and we'll be talking about potassium later on in the show, which is another important element or factor when it comes to the storage ability of our vegetables and fruits. But before that, we're going to head to some notable news that is influencing us here in the Hawaiian Islands in relation to agriculture and in relation to community as well. And we just want to add our voices to the chorus of cheers and gratitude that thanks to you, the listeners, thanks to our underwriters, thanks to the community that turned out in record fashion. We did meet our $60,000 goal, very exciting, for our last membership drive that just finished up. We want to mahalo so much the folks who donated to this particular show, and that would be David Aroshin, Marshall, Kelly, Cameron, Jessica, Tracy, Baba, Lisa, and Patricia. Mahalo so much for your support and encouragement for us to continue on here with In the Garden on the Farm and all the great programming that we have and the varied programming that we have, similar to a garden. It's nice to have lots of different varieties growing, and we sure have a lot of different varieties of programmers, music, public affairs shows, and lots of great entertainment and stimulating conversation. And it's great to be part of the family here. Thank you so much to everyone who helps keep us on the air.
Indeed. Well, stretching our notable news outward just a little bit off the shores of our very own island, I'm proud to say and very happy to say that in Oregon, in Jackson and Josephine counties, which basically encompass the Rogue River Valley, being one of the largest seed-growing regions in the Northwest, have basically put a ban on GMO agriculture at a 2-to-1 margin. Voters emphatically voted to ban GMO agriculture in the area, particularly because it's a seed-growing region and lots of people grow wind-pollinated plants. It was really a big issue for them. We talked a few weeks ago about the importance of zero tolerance of genetic contamination in our seeds for organic agriculture. So this is certainly a big step in that direction. Interestingly enough, the competing campaigns for that bill raised $1.3 million. And guess what? $1 million of that came from big ag companies to try to defeat the bill. So way to go, voters out there in Oregon, for keeping our seeds safe for us to use in our organic systems.
Truly, and what a great example of another small community like Kauai County that basically says it comes down to us, it comes down to the people who live in a region who care that much about the quality of their environment, the quality of life, and the values that they want reflected in the practices that people are doing on the land. So it's encouraging, certainly, to see that happening across this fine planet of ours and all our brothers and sisters doing a part.
Yeah, and speaking of people doing their part, this from the May issue of Acres magazine. The organic industry has grown over 245% since 2002. There are now, it's a record-breaking number of 18,513 organic farms in the United States. Unbelievable. And consumer demand for organic products has grown exponentially over the past decade, with retails valued at $35 billion per year. So that means we are voting with our dollar at the store. The industry is growing. And just to say, way to go, everyone, for voting with your dollar every single day. And also to say that people out there who are entrepreneurial and looking for a career path, this is obviously a winner. There's definitely a lot of growth there, and it's just wonderful news for us, those of us who really love to eat tasty, nutritious, poison-free food. So, yeah. Way to go, everybody.
Yeah. Voting with our tummies. I love it. On maybe not quite as happy a note, but certainly we need to keep track of even the more troubling aspects of news that affects us in agriculture. This not coming as a huge surprise, but a new report from the USDA shows bees, crucial to many crops, are still dying at a worrisome rate. This from Reuters News Service. Honeybees, crucial in the pollination of many U.S. crops, are still dying off at a worrisome rate, according to a government report just released. It turns out that the total loss of managed honeybee hives was 23% this past winter. That is less than the year before, 30%, but more than 22% the year before that. So it's kind of hanging around that 25% or a quarter of all hives being lost in the wintertime. And bee deaths, it's said by the, in sort of governmental fashion, is economically unsustainable. It turns out that they pollinate a quarter of all the food that we eat, and not to mention all of the bee products that we use, honey and the rest. And it's thought that pesticides in general, and specifically that class of pesticides called nicotinoids, that are particularly harmful to bees over winter and especially during cold winters. So good that here in Hawaii we don't have super cold winters, at least not at low elevations, where our honeybees wouldn't be further compounded. But certainly even in fair weather, these pesticides are extremely harmful. And these nicotinoid pesticides are manufactured by Bayer and Syngenta.
Oh, what a surprise.
Two of our good neighbors here on the west side of the island. They're also used by Monsanto and Pioneer as well. So whether they're making them or using them, these dangerous pesticides are being used here on Kauai, more than likely by these companies. And just another reason for us to be the change that we need. Throw a couple bees in there on bee. But there is an opportunity for you to be part of the change that is sweeping this land. And there's still an opportunity to jump in on a couple of informational meetings on the draft pesticide GMO rules. So this is related to Ordinance 960, formerly known as Bill 2491. The County of Kauai is holding informational meetings to receive feedback from the public on the draft rules. And these draft rules are available on the kauai.gov website. If you look at the What's New box on the left-hand side of the page, there is a second one down, Administrative Rules for Chapter 22, Article 23, will get you to those draft rules. And they're asking people, if you can get a chance to review the rules before you get to the meeting, you probably would be able to respond a little bit just from more of a knowledgeable place. But I am checking into, give me just a second here. It seems that you can send in information to the county If you can't make it to the meeting, you can email a comment to Deputy County Attorney Mona Clark, mclark, at kauai.gov. However, you need to do that really soon, so not much time. But if you can make it to the meetings, there's already been meetings in Lihue, Waimea, and Kapa'a last night, and yet this evening, Hale Halawai Center at 5 p.m. this Wednesday, May 21st, and then tomorrow at the Kaloa Neighborhood Center at 5 o'clock as well. You can go to one of these informational meetings on the draft rules for pesticide and GMO regulation here on Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
So we will hope to see our community stepping up to these opportunities. And it is in the Garden on the Farm that you're listening to right now on Kauai Community Radio. Coming up in this hour, we're going to be getting up close and personal, but not too up close and personal, to the family Cactaceae, and we'll also be talking about potassium. But first, we're going to jump into a fresh pick selection that Robin's been eyeing for us at the farmer's market tables.
Yes, no doubt. Let's take a trip to the farmer's market right now, and let's talk about onions. Onions, we talked about good growing of them months ago when they were going into the ground, and here they are. They are at market, and lots of people have gotten on the onion campaign this year, so there's lots of market onions right now to be had. Some of them are sold fresh with their tops still on. Those should probably be used right away. Other ones have been cured for you by the farmers lovingly, and they're dried. They store a little bit better when they're dry. And the sharp, pungent smell is due to a sulfur compound that's called allele propyl disulfide. And red onions happen to have less of this compound, which usually is why people put them in salads and eat them raw a little more often. However, the sweet yellow onions available at our markets right now are absolutely to live for. They are so good. They're great raw or cooked. Certainly really delving into the onion soup right now, as I've pulled lots of onions out of my own garden, and there's plenty of them. Onions are low calorie and high fiber. They have anti-mutagenic property, which means basically they protect from cancers, anti-diabetic properties, which means they lower blood sugar in people with diabetes. They reduce cholesterol. They're antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. They reduce blood pressure. They're a good source of vitamin C and B-complex vitamins. Basically, we want to be eating onions every single day for our health. They're delicious. You can store them in a cool, dark place away from moisture and humidity, which is for some people in their refrigerator. For other people, maybe out in a dry part of their kitchen, out of direct sunlight. I find that I like to make curries, stir fries, soups, pastas, salads, it just goes on and on, our uses for onions. And they're such a nutritious vegetable, and we're so blessed to have such an amazing abundance of them right now on Kauai. You will not find them in another month or two at the markets. They are a very seasonal pick, so this is your chance.
Now, when I see those green, the onions with the live tops on them, has that been harvested at a different point of maturity than the ones that you say the farmers have been curing, or is it?
No, well, I'm not sure how all the different farmers practice their harvesting, but generally when onion tops fall over is when they're harvested, and they may be sold right away, so the top may still look kind of green. But doesn't mean necessarily that it was picked early while the top was still upright and green. It really just depends on how many, I think, that people get at once. And if there's a huge amount, I think the farmer will lay them out in a sunny but very dry spot to fully dry. And what I learned from our great farmer friend John Parziali is that laying them out until the tops are completely dry, and at that point you can just break the top off, and that you may get a little more storage time out of them after that. Although some people braid the onions, that's where onion braids came from, of course. You can leave the tops intact also.
Nice. And because I know you have such a fine attunement to discerning different varieties, are you noting that people, all these farmers who maybe didn't bring onions to the market last year, but now you're seeing them on so many tables, is there a diversity of varieties that you're observing?
Yes, yes, actually. And Tim, who we spoke with on our Good Growing Onion show, he's probably got the biggest selection of anyone. He's got gorgeous red onions right now at the market, which are rarer to find for sure. And when it comes to yellow, there's a number of varieties out there. I can't really tell them apart. Most people go with the hybrid of the Maui onion version, which is Gran X, or I grew Super X. They're all in that range. Candy, Pumbaa, those are some of the larger onions you're going to find. Although One Song Farm experimented with a white onion this year, which haven't quite come out to market yet, or at least I didn't notice them. But the white onions are pretty discernible from all the other ones. Mm-hmm. They're all very sweet and delicious.
Sounds like a worthwhile trip to the farmer's market coming up soon for all of us.
Yeah, every week there's something really notable out there and delicious, and we just have such hardworking farmers who are so dedicated to putting out the most beautiful abundance week after week, or day after day for some of them, visit many markets. And there's such dedication in there, and you can bet that comes through on the dinner plate.
Well, thanks for being our cub reporter out there, Robin.
My pleasure.
In the trenches, as it were. And we're turning around a new leaf. We're turning over a new leaf, as it were, with a new plant family for now. This celebrating summer has truly arrived, and the ocean is calm. The wind has died down, and the sun is out, and it feels like we live in Hawaii or something. Finally. And it's a real time of celebration, and we're seeing that reflected in the different plants around us. And there is a particular plant family, and I want to thank Robin for selecting out this one for this time of year, because it is such a celebration of sun. It is for the sun worshippers, and that is the plant family Cactaceae.
Yes, and Cactaceae, you know how I love to go outwards just a little bit before we dive inwards on the family. It's in the order Caryophyllales, and interestingly enough, in that same order and very closely related to the cactus is the Chenopodiaceae family, which is such a surprise to me. It's beets and chard and spinach, just next door neighbors to each other in the plant world. Mm-hmm. Also closely related, Amaranthiaceae, which includes purslane, celosia, and the grain amaranth, of course. And then, not such a surprise, Portulaceae is the purslane and portulaca family, which is a succulent. So that one was a little more intuitive for me, but I found it really interesting to think that beets and chard could be so closely related to the cactus.
It is. Well, sometimes plants take such a radical turn in terms of specialization, and no plant family could represent that more than Cactaceae.
Indeed.
They are so special. It is a dicotyledonous family, and that was one of the first things when I was doing my research and opening up the plant family book. I was like, I wonder, is it a dicot or a monocot?
Yeah, I actually was pretty convinced that it would be a single seed leaf family rather than the two seed leaf family. I was pretty surprised by that.
Surprised. And yet it is dicotyledonous, and it is a family consisting, and it really depends on who you're asking, or there's a lot of different thoughts on it, but perhaps it's roughly around 100 genera, maybe around 2,000 species of perennial xerophytic trees, shrubs, climbers, and epiphytes. And cacti are spined and leafless except for an ancient ancestral form, the genus Pereschia, which does have leaves. and is a beautiful vining plant that, after looking at pictures, I thought, I would never guess this was a cactus, but it actually is a true cactus.
Sure, and you check out those thorns, and you know right away.
Yes.
Actually, there's a little bit of a difference between thorns and spines, as we learned about the cactus. What they actually have is spines,
okay,
and not
you.
Thorns.
Thank you. So then you educated me about the areoles.
The areoles, this is basically the identifying feature of the cactus, and they're basically a highly reduced branch, an almost non-existent branch, and it's the place where spines emerge out of the plant. So you'll see they're kind of geometrically placed all around the plant, and it's where each spine originates. Also, any shoot or side branch of the cactus would emerge from the same place, and also flowers.
Yes, they call that the axillary bud, all of those appendages emanate from. And spines, of course, protecting cacti from grazers. They also help to condense dew in really dry environments and then guide that dew down the plant and right into the root system area. And cacti are also very good at storing water in their fleshy tissues. And they have a few other things that help to distinguish them. Cacti have delayed bark formation.
What's that?
So it turns out that most dicotyledonous plants will develop bark in a few years. And the bark is replacing an area that otherwise would be doing photosynthesis. But because cacti don't have any leaves, or almost all cacti don't have true leaves, then they need to keep most of their body in photosynthetic process.
Right, sure. So the actual body of the plant, the main trunk, is what's doing the photosynthesis.
Exactly. And so that's one of the distinguishing characteristics. And as well, they have a skeletal and vascular systems that are highly modified to allow for extremes in temperature and water content. During a typical growing year, at least for the desert cacti, they can hugely expand and contract. And so they needed to come up with specialized ribs and vascular structures that would allow for liquids and water to flow through their bodies under those difficult circumstances.
Yeah, sure. It's said that a full-grown saguaro can hold something like 200 gallons of water after a rainstorm. And, of course, if you look on the Internet, there's lots of photos of time-elapse photos of them actually swelling out. And the ribs almost disappear as they enlarge. It's pretty cool.
Amazing. And in addition to their beautiful and quirky and strange appearance, as a vegetatively growing plant, they also can sometimes have outrageous, showy, and fragrant flowers. And anyone who's been near a night-blooming cirrus or dragon fruit can attest to the magnificence of the blossoms that are produced. And many other kinds of cacti have so many beautiful colored flowers that are quite lovely.
Yeah, it's quite a world in and of itself.
Interesting thing that cacti of different genera can be grafted together. I thought that was quite interesting. Certainly can't get away with that with other plant genera. Although common from deserts and other arid environments, some are native to rainforests. And here in Hawaii, we don't have any native cacti, but it certainly is encouraging for those of us who live in high rainfall areas and knowing that cacti can very easily be overwatered, that there are rainforest-adapted cacti.
Yeah, sure. There's
well in our conditions.
There's like two categories. There's desert cactus, and then there's tropical-type cacti. And I have seen both of them growing well here in the islands.
Yeah. So it's a matter of just being good at what you do, I guess, huh? Giving them the right conditions for growing. And we're going to be talking about good drainage next week in our good growing segment, or our good growing considerations for cacti and other plants in general. Cacti originated from South America, I've read, and one-third of all cacti are native to Mexico, while 40% of succulents, of which cacti are a subset of, are native to southern Africa. So those are the areas of greatest diversity. All true cacti are native exclusively to the Americas.
So succulents is the larger group, and so all cactuses are, or cacti, are succulents, but not all succulents are cactus. Is that correct?
Yes, I do believe. Certainly the second is true. Not all succulents are cacti. I believe that all cacti are considered succulents. And there are rare species, certainly, and they often have extremely restricted ranges, meaning they sometimes they're only found within a square kilometer or even several hundred yards of a particular area. And in that way, they're quite similar to our Hawaiian native plants that have extremely restricted ranges. Sometimes rare plants, there's only a handful of them, not because there used to be a huge amount, but sometimes historically plants were always rare because they had such specialized habitats. And another great opportunity, if we are doing it in a ethical way, to contribute to plant conservation by growing out some of these rare and beautiful plants in the cacti or cactaceae family. However, the flip side of the coin there is that over-collection is one of the major threats, and folks going in, whether they be amateur or even commercial collectors that are on some level legally permitted to collect wild plants, which seems crazy to me that it would be legal anywhere to go and collect plants for the horticultural trade by digging them out of nature. That is certainly one of the big problems as well. We know that so much of the land has been altered through cattle grazing, and the cattle will tromp, or even in marginal habitats where they get down where there's nothing else to graze on, they will graze on cacti despite their spines. So, as I had said before, there are no native species of cacti in Hawaii, and according to the Smithsonian website, there are 10 naturalized species in Hawaii, which means that they have escaped cultivation and actually developed regenerating populations on their own. And all but one of those 10 naturalized species are found on Kauai. In fact, half of the naturalized species are only recorded from the island of Kauai. And I gather that there are some cacti fanciers down on the south side, because Poipu, Hanapepe, these are places where a number of these naturalized species found nowhere else in the Hawaiian Islands as naturalized plants have gained a foothold and become locals.
Yeah, certainly it sounds like the plantation gardens down there in Poipu on the historic walk must be a nice hotbed for odd cactus species that we might not see everywhere else on Kauai.
Truly, and thanks to our engineer Jack for bringing that to our attention. And as well, cacti, cactaceae, 35 cultivated genera and around 120 cultivated varieties, according to the Bishop Museum checklist of cultivated plants, although there may be many, many more. And however, we're going to focus in on a few of the most important ones for us from the perspective of growers of food or growers of beautiful plants. And you want to kick that off for us, Robin?
Sure. That would be Hylocereus undatus, the dragon fruit. Very popular for fresh eating here all summer long. Really refreshing. Definitely considered one of those tropical cacti. And from what I understood, you want to look for the self-pollinating varieties if you're interested in growing them. And some of those that are available around here are, I like this one, Seoul Kitchen, but it's S-E-O-U-L, like from Korea, Seoul Kitchen. Kind of like that one. Dark Star, American Beauty. Gaining in popularity are the red-fleshed fruits. Typically, we see a bright pink fruit with a white flesh and black seeds, although Sweeter and Mobeta is the ones with the red fleshy fruit inside, surrounding the seeds as well.
I've not had those yet. I've seen the pictures, though, and mouthwateringly, deliciously looking. In addition to that, Hyloserius undatus, a couple of other species in the same genus here, Costa Ricensis and Megalanthus is the yellow, or sometimes referred to as the Guatemalan variety.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking with Marta of Molawa'a Organica'a this morning, and she was describing that that one's a bit harder to grow, and they're continuing to cultivate it, but haven't had as much luck as the beautiful white one, which prolific. She says they haven't started to flower yet this season. She's expecting to see the flowers in June, and then the fruits come pretty fast after that. So if we're lucky enough, we'll be hearing a fresh picked report from Robin in the next couple of months that the dragon fruit has arrived to the market. I'm sure we will.
For sure.
Indeed. So, yes, night blooming cirrus, pitahaya, are other names for dragon fruit native to Central America. And we had considered again the potential invasiveness of this plant at a score of 9 in the weed risk assessment. Megalanthus, smaller, this is the yellow one, at a 4. So something to keep an eye on, and they're quite established. I know that there are huge stands of them down in Poipu. They have some really fabulous stands of them at the National Tropical Botanical Garden as well. And so consider where you're growing, and if you live near a sensitive habitat, then I would say we need to be more careful about the plants that we're growing that could escape cultivation in those areas. And another cactus that would fit that description well would be the panini or prickly pear, Opuntia ficus indica, probably native to Mexico, but it's been naturalized in so many places in the tropical world, it's hard to know really where it's from. And noted not only the fruit, but noted again, tip of the hat to Jack, our engineer, the pads of the prickly pear cactus, also edible. I was in Mexico last October, and they were piled high at the market, the pads, and there was always seemed to be a couple of guys in the produce section who were scraping off the little spines that are on there. And yeah, they're good grilled over the fire, but you can also eat them raw. And one less favorable thing about the Opuntia cactus, though, are the detachable, minute, barbed prickles. They're called glochids, and anybody who's had glochids in your hand from brushing up against a prickly pear cactus, I used to live in Colorado, and you would just see them on hikes, and they would see you. And I know you used to live there too, Robin.
Did you ever get they leap out onto your clothing.
They really do.
And then, you know, something's poking your back, and you have to figure out, what is that?
Oh, they're horrible.
They are.
And if you ever made the mistake of trying to pull them out with your teeth, and then suddenly they're also in your lips.
Mm. Ooh.
So I read a good, if you happen to be in this kind of situation, and it's really quite amazing, in just like a very small part of your skin, you can have hundreds and hundreds of them. They're so tiny. But the suggestion was removing them first with tweezers, and then with some household glue on gauze, sort of mush that on and let it dry. And then when it's dry, you rip the gauze off.
Ouch!
And apparently it takes almost all of those little glochids out of your skin.
Well, this is the price we pay for getting a little too up close and personal with the cactus, I see.
Surely. So another fun one and interesting, we had mentioned before, Pereschia is the genus that is that sort of ancient lineage that still does have leaves. And this plant is also known as Barbados gooseberry, lemon vine, Pereschia aculeata. And this plant has been in the Hawaiian Islands for at least 80 years, according to the research I did. But and it does have a weed risk score of 13, which is rather high. However, in 80 years, it has not, actually, 90 years, I think, it has not naturalized. So that could be an indication that it really doesn't want to naturalize here, or it could be that where it was cultivated, there just wasn't that dispersal mechanism for the seed. Maybe it wasn't having successful fertilization of the seed, and if it began to be cultivated in a different part of the Hawaiian Islands, all of a sudden maybe it could just explode. So the challenge here with this particular plant is it can smother trees if it gets too verdant, as it were, or if it's very successful, it can actually smother the plants that it uses as a trellis. Very beautiful vine, beautiful flowering plant, but maybe one that we don't want to take a risk with.
Sounds like it.
So, any other favorites on your list? I'm going to mention one that I know you were excited about, and we'll hear more about next week, but the Opuntia cochineellifera, or the cochineal cactus, the source of the beautiful red dye, also grown here in Hawaii. As well, perhaps one of the most popular ornamental cacti, the golden barrel cactus, Echinocactus grossonii. And this is an extremely rare cactus in its native environment. The native habitat, unfortunately, submerged due to the construction of a dam. And most of the native habitat is just permanently underwater now.
Cactus aren't going to thrive very well there, are they?
Definitely not. Other popular ones, the moon cactus, Hericia martinii. This is one that has also gone wild in the Poipu area, native to Argentina and Paraguay. As well, the Sirius cactus, Sirius uruguayensis, and beautiful, similar to the dragon fruit in terms of the flowers, but more of a pencil like vegetative portion. And so it's a huge family. We'll be talking more about it next week and talking about more of the diversity as well as good growing of cactus. So please tune in next week for more discussion on our cactus family friends. And we want to direct you as well to a website that we want to feature today, and it is the Pine Island Nursery. It can be located at tropicalfruitnursery.com. They're located in Miami, Florida, but they do ship here to Hawaii. I spoke with one of the nursery workers today, and they sell a very nice selection of avocado varieties, dragon fruit, lychee, mango, and sapodilla. And they have a great viewer on their website where you can learn about many of the different varieties of these different fruits. And as well, they have 25 varieties of dragon fruit. Right now, I understand they're filling a big order, and they don't have as much as they normally have right now. So they suggested that we send them an email in describing those varieties that we were interested in. But they do bare root plants here, and a great opportunity to get some of more of the diversity of dragon fruit. And even if it is not a self-pollinating variety, it seems if we were to make a devotion of something in this lifetime, going out in time in the early morning to witness the outrageous blossoms of the dragon fruit and actually hand pollinate them would be something that I would be willing to sign up for in this lifetime.
Sure.
To get good fruit.
What a treat.
Truly. So this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio with your hosts, Paul and Robin. And we are going to move on to our final segment of the show right now. And we're going to look at Secrets of the Soil Builders. And we're going to share some secrets with you about one of the most important plant nutrients, and that plant nutrient is potassium.
Potassium, abbreviated as K. So it appears on your fertilizer label as the third element of three, N standing for nitrogen, P for phosphorus, and K for potassium. Other times we call it potash. And potash is important to plants because it increases plants' disease resistance. It stimulates roots, which is why we use kelp formulas as a root stimulator when we're doing our cuttings and stuff like that. And it is a positively charged ion, which makes it a cation.
I've got some other important things that potassium does for plants as well. Potassium keeps plant tissues turgid, sufficiently filled with water. It helps with the opening and closing of leaf stomata, which helps the plant to cool itself in the hot weather. It's involved in water uptake, water retention in plant tissues, the transport of water in the xylem and photosynthates in the phloem. And potassium also affects cell extension, making cell walls thicker, which is part of about that plant resistance, disease resistance, resistance to lodging, and effects of pests and diseases. And as I'd mentioned earlier, fruits and vegetables grown with adequate potassium seem to have a longer post-harvest storage life. All that information thanks to the University of Hawaii's research.
Great. Well, potassium is mostly available in soils rich, believe it or not, in clay and or humus. According to Amigo Bob's book, Know Your Soil, which I'll give you some links to later after we have our discussion. And basically, you can increase the amount of potassium by increasing organic matter. What a surprise. This is something, a theme we talk about over and over and over again. So certainly if you haven't gotten your compost piles up and running, now is a great time to start, knowing how good it's going to be for your plants. We add organic matter and humus by double digging, addition of quality compost. It goes a long way in providing potassium to your plants. Animal manures are also fairly high in potassium. So that's another way to get them in there to our plants. Kelp meal is a good choice for backyard gardeners as it contains a broad spectrum of other elements too.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading that kelp meal is actually a slow release of potassium. I was surprised based on it just seemed like it's soluble, and you said that as a feeder in the nursery, it seems like you would be looking for a really quick response. So maybe you know something different based on your experience.
I know what I know, thanks to our resident soil guy, Joseph Dunsmore, who made me aware that the potassium that is available, that's there in your kelp, you know, foliar feeds, is not in the available form to the plants, but the inclusion of LAB, lactic acid bacteria, into that foliar feed, the bacteria will break it down and make it usable much more quickly. So I have definitely seen the shift as I've now started using LAB with my kelp meal.
Nice. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So it also greatly stimulates earthworms and other microbes. Regular foliar feeding with liquid kelp, like MaxiCrop, it won't make up for poor soil practices, but it can increase the crop's uptake of other elements and provide some direct nutritional support to the plants. And once again, this is all from Amigo Bob Contesano's book called Know Your Soil. And if you're interested in getting a small copy of this book, I have one myself. I got at the class he taught this year. You can reach out to him at orgamigo@gmail.com. So that's orgamigo@gmail.com. And thanks so much, Amigo Bob, for your work.
It was great having him as a guest, and I can imagine based on his personality that the book is probably an easy read.
It's an easy read.
And with soil science being a rather dense topic, there couldn't be a greater thing to have sort of a humorous or easy to read relief from. So
sure. And you know what makes that book even more valuable is that it's really about reading your soil test. That's the purpose of the book. So if you're a person out there who's been listening to us talking about the importance of soil tests and you think, oh, well, how am I going to even know what the soil test is really telling me? The book is meant to decipher a soil test for you. And he has lots of different recommendations based on what you would read on your soil test and then how you would actually get what is needed into the soil at the proper amounts. So
right.
It's pretty cool.
Right. So there truly is no substitute for knowing what's going on in your soil before you actually add some of these natural sources of potassium. And just to list a few of them, potassium sulfate at 54% potassium is perhaps the best bang for your buck. And as well, another strong source, maybe the second strongest source, would be K-Mag or potassium magnesium sulfate. So that has magnesium in it, whereas the first option didn't. And you don't know whether or not you need one or the other until you take the soil test to find out where your magnesium is at. Potassium, it turns out, is easily displaced by calcium and magnesium, which means they take the same sites in the soil. So if you're adding too much calcium or magnesium, then the soil's capacity to hold potassium for the plants is diminished. Potassium also is mobile and prone to leaching. So if you add too much, and it's going to drain out and go in, you're going to lose that fertilizer if you're in a higher rainfall area. Other sources of natural sources of potassium, green sand, which doesn't get too good of a rap here because it's so expensive to get in the Hawaiian Islands. It only has 6% potassium, and that potassium is very slow release. So it's not the kind of fertilizer you'd use to get an immediate effect. However, if you're planting trees, it might be worthwhile if you can get your hands on some for a perennial plant that's going to be there for many years. Wood ash, much easier to get a hold of, 5% potassium. We will be speaking in more detail about wood ash on an upcoming show, but just to know, it is readily available source of potassium, but you got to be careful and not add too much. So we'll go into more detail there. And again, we had mentioned kelp meal at a 2% that is slow release unless you add your lactic acid bacteria, in which case it is more readily available. So sources of potassium for you. And, you know, we'd like to get away from the 50-pound bag paradigm of always going and getting. And Robin has something to share on that.
Yeah, thanks, Cousin Rich, for giving us a call. He says that it's a brilliant time to collect limu, and that is a calcium and potassium-rich addition to our garden. Yeah. Of course, we always want to encourage people not to just go out there and start ripping limu out of the reef system, because there's other people out there who eat it, like turtles. And so the proper way is to pinch off a tip and leave the holdfast and the plant growing on the reef, but definitely a venture away from the 50-pound bag is a short trip to the ocean. With the full moon we just had, the low tides were just dramatic, like really dramatic. I don't know if you noticed them on Sunday in particular. Yeah, it's pretty easy to get out there and find some limu on the right part of the island. So thanks, yeah, Cuz.
Truly, thank you, Cousin Rich. And one final thing on that potassium, and we say it so often, but if you add organic matter, it's going to help keep that potassium. It's going to prevent the leaching to some extent and help to buffer it. And basically, you're going to be building your soil in so many great ways, so add organic matter when adding potassium amendments is a great idea. We're going to finish up with a few quick announcements before we say goodbye for today. There is a Springtime Gardening with Sun and Lisa sharing at One Song Farm coming up this Sunday, May 25th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at their farm in the Kilauea area. There'll be concurrent sessions, Advanced Gardening with Sun, and at the same time, Biointensive Gardening Basis with Lisa. They'll also include an introduction to lactofermentation. And there is a fee for this event to reserve your spot. Or for more information, call 635-3020. The Fruit Growers Conference coming up today. It's happening today. No, it's happening next Wednesday. Sorry, May 28th. It's at KCC from 8:45 to 3:30 p.m., and it's at Kauai Community College Office of Continuing Education building. Topics include pineapple pest and disease, plant diseases of fruits, papaya pest management, tropical fruits and fruit fly control, lots of different ways to be aware of those things that, that limit or constrain our production of fruits. Another fee for the event, register by May 19th. That would be, that's already passed, but registration is still available at 245-8318. Got 1 week left for the Voyage of Discovery Art Exhibition at NTBG, Rare Botanical Prints from Captain Cook's First Pacific Expedition at their beautiful Juliet Rice Wickman Botanical Research Center. And for more information, call 332-7324, extension 227. We're also excited to share with you an announcement on an organic feed and fertilizer co-op that's cropping up, seeking interested farmers, ranchers, and gardeners to form an organic feed and fertilizer buying cooperative on Kauai. And you've got to be committed to purchasing on a monthly basis and help in the unloading and in Molawa'a every month. Poultry feed, goat feed, rabbit feed, alfalfa pellets, hog feed, various whole grains. It sounds like there's definitely a focus on the feed portion, but then also opportunity to have minerals and fertilizers as well. And for more information to get involved in that co-op, you could give a call to 828-0095 if you would like. Oh, I should tell you as well that there is a GMO activist strategy session with Jeffrey Smith coming up at Common Ground in Kilauea. This is Saturday, May 24th. No, I'm sorry. This is tomorrow, Thursday, May 22nd, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Common Ground. You can get more information at kauairising.org. There's also going to be another event this coming Saturday, May 24th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at a March Against Monsanto. That's happening down in Waimea. The Waimea Canyon Middle School is where they're meeting. And from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. the same evening, Jeffrey Smith will be giving a community talk on GMOs as well. If you'd like to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. And if you want to hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. And we'd like to thank the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team: engineer Jack, phone tech Mac, webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean. Special thanks to Mac for handling all the calls today. We got quite a few calls in. Mahalo for reaching out to us and for everybody who makes this show possible. And please stay tuned for Tracy and Kauai Vibrations from 1 to 3 p.m. and for the Pupule Show with our engineer, Shaka Kiaka, from 3 to 5.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank you for listening today. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha.
Aloha.